Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 73. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
We are actually going to talk about two Friday the 13th fan films tonight. New first for our podcast covering fan films. We will get into those in a little bit. But as always, we talk about what we've been watching over the last month first. What have you been up to, Chris? What have you seen?
Not as much as normal, but I did catch a couple of movies in theaters, and I'm watching a TV show, so I guess we'll talk about that. I saw the Super Mario Galaxy movie, which you'll hear more about us talk on our video game show, Perfectly Sane Show, but briefly, it's not as good as the first one, which Jeff didn't like. So, it's fun enough. Like it's basically, I think there's even less of a story this time than the first time. And it's more like, hey, what if we did like little 7-minute shorts that are cool, like by themselves? If you were like, here's a short of like Peach and Luigi going through like a casino type area, fighting like these weird turtle creatures or whatever, like that might work on its own, but like then you fit that into this movie that doesn't really make sense plot wise, like why that's happening. And that's what a lot of this is. There's like a Mario Kart segment that doesn't really do anything except, I guess, at the end of it, like Yoshi's introduced. Star Fox is in it for some unknown reason. Like,
they got the remake coming.
Yeah.
And I get the kids excited for it.
I know we're going to talk about this tomorrow, but not just the remake, but evidently there will be another Star Fox game next year.
So I didn't hear that.
We're getting Star Fox in like 2 months or a month. And then new Star Fox sometime next year. Huh. So that's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, Super Mario Galaxy movie. I didn't find it quite as good. I didn't find it as charming as the Super Mario Brothers movie. But, it's pretty Mario and Peach and the lot do Mario things. That's it.
Mario doing Mario shit.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, how much story are you actually going to pull out of a Mario film? Like, I understand why Nintendo would be like, this is what we're going with. But like story wise, like it's kind of not, it's not the narrative like king of Nintendo stuff. So, another movie I watched, and this is one that it's weird because it's a revival of a series, but I guess it takes that original series and like makes kind of like a narrative thing out of it. Is Faces of Death?
Yeah. I wanted to hear what you had to say about this.
So like, what was it? Like in the late 70s, early 80s, there was like a TV series, like it was like a VHS series of like it was called Faces of Death. And it was like, it was things happening on video that like the premise was like, these are real deaths. They weren't, they were all like staged and filmed,
but were they like all staged? I thought they would mix in some real shit.
Maybe there was some real shit. Like,
and some of it, like, I've seen them. I saw the first one anyways. And, like, one thing was like, oh, these people in this country drink deer blood. And they just show them drinking deer blood. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. So like, weird shit like that. Like, yeah. They intersperse, like, some weird documentary stuff that probably is real.
Yeah, yeah. But then a bunch of fake staged. Yeah,
like, fake stage death. Like, people getting hit by trains and, like, shootings. And like, the premise is, like, you're watching these people die, yeah. Right?
It's basically Twitter.
Yeah, sure.
If you let the videos go on Twitter.
Yeah.
I will say this for the series, though. I remember this in the 80s. Like, they had some of the most amazing VHS covers, and they were, like, scary. Like, just like, oh,
yeah.
I don't want to fuck with that.
Yeah, no, it was like one that like I think like somebody once said, "Oh, we should watch this," and like they weren't able to like get a copy of it because like the video store in our little shopping center wouldn't sell, like, let us rent it. Like they're like, "No, you guys are like 12, so like, please usher yourselves out of here." So this is basically somebody really likes Faces of Death, like the old series, and they're copying the deaths in them, like, but staging them for real. And this girl that works for like a TikTok or YouTube, like she's like a content moderator, she starts seeing these videos come up, and she like lets the first one kind of go through, but then she gets another one and it's like she starts questioning it, and she starts flagging them. And ultimately, she ends up getting fired because she, like, steals some shit to, like, try and prove that it's real and go to the cops. And that has the killer then kind of latch onto her. And it becomes a little bit of, like, a slasher at that point where you know who the killer is. You see him and he captures her. She gets away, blah, blah, blah. It's fun enough. If you're going to do like something, if you're not going to just do Faces of Death again, where you're going to like fake a bunch of real deaths, like
you couldn't do it now. Cause again, like that, yeah, there's video of real death everywhere.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Again, it's just like on the internet, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So like they do the right thing though with this is like they make it like somebody's posting this shit to YouTube. So it like it makes sense, like, cause that shit does get posted like on Twitter and probably other like shittier social media sites. In fact, I've seen shit on Reddit that's like maybe borderline that as well. So I think like they did the right thing with it. It's fine. Like if you're gonna do something with the Faces of Death property, this is probably the right thing to do. I think it's ultimately satisfying. Like the ending is pretty cool. I liked it. It's goofy, but I thought it was fun. And there are some cool kills in it, the way that this copycat guy is like setting stuff up. They show what I assume is from the Faces of Death, like the original death,
mm-hmm.
And then like his staged version of it, which is like kind of like a shot for shot remake, but slightly more brutal. So I thought like that was neat. Like this guy is, he's set up this like torture dungeon where he's killing people. And it's a fun little film. I mean, I would probably wait for it to hit a streaming service. It's out there. But I would,
it's
wait.
Out now. It came out this week, but I'm not paying $25.
I would wait till it hits like Netflix or Shudder or whatever. Yeah. In fact, it might be a Shudder movie.
I don't remember if that was what popped up.
I don't know if like I have to dun, like the Shudder logo beforehand. I think it might have been because I'm like looking at the other films I watched this year, and I know one of them was a Shudder one. This one might have been the one. So it's gonna hit a real service soon, so you don't have to pay for it. I would recommend watching it that way. I don't think it's worth paying to go to watch or go see. I just happened to go see it with my like AMC sub. So.
Yeah.
And the other thing I've been watching is so Disney Plus released a new Star Wars series, animated series called Maul Shadow Lord, which focuses on Darth Maul. And I am 9 episodes into that. And
9 episodes? How many fucking episodes is it?
10. I'm on the last one. There's 10 episodes. And I guess this is season 1. There'll be another season. I think it's pretty cool. I think they've done a really good job. It starts out with like, well, Maul, if you watch Solo, the movie Solo, like Maul shows up at the end of that movie as like the leader of, yes. I think that movie is now a decade old.
So. Well, so on May 4th or whatever.
Yeah.
I watched the first half of it.
Oh,
I made up for the train sequence.
I like it. I think it's fun.
I actually had no problem with it, but mostly I had to go run and do something. And I'm like, we'll pick this up later. And she don't care. And then I just forgot about it. Kept playing Zelda or whatever.
I get it. I do say, like, out of the Disney stuff, I think the story ones, Rogue One and Solo, I think are the best ones. Like, Rogue One, way more serious approach to it, and Solo is more of like an adventure.
It's just kind fun, yeah. I was enjoying it. I was having fun with it.
But yeah, Maul shows up at the end. He's kind of in charge of the syndicate, this crime syndicate, and this is showing how that happens, how he's going to take over. And I think it's fun. They do spoilers for anybody watching it, and I think it's leaked everywhere. Vader shows up, so I assume, because that's how it ends, is like Vader shows up, he lights his lightsaber, and it goes to black. So I assume Maul is going to fight Vader and probably lose, but escape at the end of it. So. I'm enjoying it. I think it's actually very good. Which, if this is like the quality of, like, their animated stuff is normally pretty good, but if this is like where they're going, I'm kind of excited for the Mando movie in a couple weeks. See how that turns out.
I think it looks fun.
Yeah.
I was actually going to check out the Darth Maul show until I found out it was animated, and I was like, Which, again, it's kind of stupid because I've heard their animated shows are awesome, but, like, I can't do it.
Everyone, like, raves about Clone Wars, and, like, I'm not a super big fan. I think the art style in this is way more, I wouldn't say realistic, it's still an animated film, but, like, it just looks better. It looks like, you could almost see it being, like, live action, if you put real people in it, you'd be like, yeah, this works. So I could see not being like, I just don't like watching cartoons. Like, I could see that, but I think it's worth giving a shot if you do think like that's something you can kind of stomach.
First try to finish Solo, and I'm definitely going to see Mando.
Yeah, I'm really excited for Mando. I think it looks really fun. So, Jeff, what have you been watching the last month?
I've been watching a whole lot. I'm going to cut out all of the movies because I want to talk about all the cool TV shows I've been watching.
Okay.
We'll start with For All Mankind, my nerd Apple show. I've
been wanting a check in on this. It is, I think it's maybe going to be the next show I start. So,
hope you check it out. I hope you like it. It is on its fifth season right now, and it's going to end next year with the sixth season. So I guess to set the table for this real quickly, like, it's a show about an alternate world where, like, what if Russia had landed on the moon before us?
Mm-hmm.
So it starts in the 60s in episode one. Each season kind of jumps a decade. So now in season five, we're in the year 2012, and it's like turned into like almost a completely different show where humans have like colonized Mars. And the thing now, the thing with this season is the people who, like, the Martians, the people who live there, find out, like, find some government or some sort of secret document that, like, they're planning to automate everything on Mars and then send everyone back to Earth, and it's causing a revolt on Mars because the people who live there, that's their home. They don't want to go to Earth. That's like the main thrust of this season. A lot of people who have watched the show, like, the consensus would be that it fell off after the first few seasons. I don't necessarily agree with that, but, like, watching this fifth season, I could kind of see it.
Okay.
For one, because it spans so much time that, like, so many characters that were, like, big and important and you loved in the, like, season one or two are dead now because it's, like, it wouldn't make, there's no way they would be alive still. And including, like, the main character is dead now. Like, he died this season. I'm like, okay, I guess I have to learn to like these new characters. So that's a bit of a hurdle. There's also the fact that now that they've, like, colonized Mars and like, a lot of the show takes place on Mars, it's, like, all in these, like, drab gray hallways. You just feel like you're watching Jason X sometimes. Like, it really feels like TV. Like, but the show still has, like, really thrilling episodes. Like, there was an awesome Prison Break episode this season I really liked. The last episode that I just watched was had, like, a really thrilling... they're, like, using Mars as a leapfrog to, like, we're going to go to a moon of Saturn and see if there's life there. And, like, it was, like, a real perilous landing. And it was, like, I got my blood pumping. I'm like, this is exciting. So, like, I could kind of see it, again, like, the problems I listed. Like, again, losing some of the characters you love is, it's tough. It's like, if you took Vic Mackey out of S.H.I.E.L.D., you took Tony Soprano out of The Sopranos. It's like, well, okay, now what? But overall, I still really like it, and I'm interested to see where it ends up, because it's going to end next season in an alternate 2027. Like, it's gonna catch up with our present, and I just like the series as a whole, because it's hopeful sci-fi. It imagines, like, a better, like, it imagines that, like, the Russians getting there first, like, changed the world in a lot of really positive ways. Like, yeah, still tragedies happen. There's still, you know, ships that explode on takeoff and blah, blah, blah. But, like, you know, here's a for instance. Russians landed on the moon first. 9/11 never happens. And you're like, what? How's that connected? It is. It's connected. There's a little thing I just discovered that, like, the show doesn't really comment on, but, like, I just looked into it, and it is the lore of the show. The internet does not exist in so, like, we have colonized Mars by 2012, but the internet does not exist. And I'm like, you know what? That is a happier future.
Yeah.
I discovered this because I was like,
may have been way better.
When they start each season, they, like, show you, like, a bunch of news clips, like, what's been going on over the last decade. And at the start of this season, they're like, a Blockbuster has opened on Mars. And I was like, why the fuck is there a Blockbuster on Mars? Wouldn't Blockbuster be, like, dead by streaming? And I look it up. It's like, there is no internet in like, the internet exists, but it is government controlled and, like, not consumer facing. So, like, the government could do things with the internet, but it's not.
Yeah.
So, like, just so, like, that's what I love about the show, is just, like, imagining, like, how things could be different from one little thing, like that whole butterfly effect thing. I'm interested to see what you think of it. I think season one and two are, like, really strong, but it'd be, like, if you're into sci-fi, it just becomes more and more sci-fi as it goes on. So, I'm enjoying it still, and I'm interested to see where it ends.
Nice. Isn't there going to be a spinoff too? Like,
yes, which is crazy because nobody seems to care about the show, but they're starting. I think it starts, like, this month. Star City, which is telling the story from the Russian perspective, which is weird because you do get a lot of the Russian perspective in the main show. So, like, I don't understand
how that works. Yeah.
I'm curious. I'm like, I guess I'll check it out because I'm a fan of the show, but, like, it just seems so odd. All right, so going from that to, let's do some Whiplash. Big HBO show is back after many, many years. Euphoria, in its third and I think final season. And I don't think anyone knows for sure, but the odds of this show going any further are kind of slim. Everyone who got cast in the show initially are huge, huge movie stars now, so... we'll see. I'm viewing this as the end of the series. It is. I have to go on my, like, little Sam Levinson rant, who is the creator of the show, and people hate him for whatever reason. They think he's a hack. They think he rips off Tarantino and he rips off P.T. Anderson and Scorsese and. And I think that a lot of people have the view that he's kind of a perv, and he's done bad shit. Like that show, The Idol with The Weeknd. Oh man, I liked it, and then it was like the worst ending ever. So I'm kind of bracing myself for a terrible ending to Euphoria. All this said, I'm the biggest Sam Levinson defender. I think this guy has real talent. His show, like Euphoria, feels like you're watching cinema. Like it doesn't feel like TV at all. It just, it's so fucking stylish. And this season, it started off, I think, a little rocky because it's been like, it's literally been like 5 years since season two or something, like at least 3 years. It's been a long time, dude. And all these people are growing up. And so it's no longer a high school show. It's, these people are adults now. And it felt like the first episode or two was just like, hey, what's everyone up to now?
Right.
And maybe there isn't a plan. Maybe it's just going to be random chaos. But, like, it has gotten, like, I've always thought the show is, like, because of how stylish it is, I think it's so good. But this season has turned into, like, a war between two drug gangs, like, with Zendaya caught in the middle. And then also she has gotten flipped by the DEA. So now she's ratting on them and trying to stay alive. It's like, we're in like Breaking Bad type like territory now. It's like fucking nuts. And it's just like, it is, I think it's the most exciting show to watch every week. And like, we watch a lot of shows and this is like the most exciting show every week because I just don't know where it's going to go. I don't know what it's like I'm going to see in an individual episode. And I'll give you this example. The latest episode starts with a 10-minute montage of Sydney Sweeney doing OnlyFans content. And it being like it's with like a kaiju sequence where she turns into like a 50-foot tall woman and she's like destroying a city and her boobs go through like the fucking windows of a skyscraper and like attack some dude. And I'm just like, what the fuck did I just see? And I don't even know, like, was that a dream sequence? Was that her doing like OnlyFans, like, because it was up until then, it's her playing with dildos and this and that. And I'm like, oh, she's filming like an OnlyFans sequence for like dudes who are into tall women, which is a thing. But that's, again, that's how crazy the show is. Like, it could just go fucking anywhere. I think he shot this whole season in VistaVision, which is, I think, what PC Anderson did one battle after another on. It just looks like, you could tell it's shot on film. It just looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you have this whole, like, Zendaya's working for, like, this guy at a strip club who's one of the drug dealers, and he's a new character, and he's great. He's so good. He, like, chews up the scenery every time he's on. Again, I just think, like I can't vouch for where this show will end up, but on an episode-to-episode, moment-to-moment basis, it's so exciting. So I'm happy to have it back, and I'm so curious to see where it ends. I guess I'll throw two things I don't totally love. Well, one is some of the most compelling characters on the show have actually died in real life, which sucks. What's his name? Eric Dane, the guy who recently died from ALS. He's in this new season. Mm-hmm. And I thought they did some really nice stuff with him in this season. And you could tell he has ALS. Like his voice is like slurred. His speech is slurred, but they wrote it into the show that he's like basically half drunk all the time because of his life is falling apart. I was like, that's really cool. Like they found a way to like work his ALS in to the plot without making it like a sob story about how he's dying.
I like Eric Dane. I did not realize he had ALS or that he had recently died. Like,
yeah. He was like, awful. I found him to be good. He is one of the more compelling characters on the show. He's one of the he's Jacob Elordi's dad on the show, and he was like a hedonist who was like raping a trans girl that was one of Jacob Elordi's classmates, and it's just super interesting storyline. My other complaint is Jacob Elordi.
Okay.
So I know you have not seen the show at all, so I'm sorry to keep going on so long about this.
It's okay.
He, in the first two seasons, he's like this jock who is like clearly evil. Like he's just straight up evil. And in this season, it's like they rewrote his character to be just completely normal. He's like married to Sydney Sweeney and just trying to get by. And he's actually in a huge amount of debt to somebody because he's trying to get this like retirement home business off the ground. And he's like, oh, and there's like a red wedding episode this season where he and Sydney Sweeney are getting married. And literally, like, it's a red wedding where, like, the episode ends with his toe getting cut off and him getting beat to shit. And, like, he's just taking it and he's just desperate. And now he's, like, pushing Sydney Sweeney to, like, do more OnlyFans content so they have money because he doesn't want to die. But I'm like, where is Dark Nate? This character was evil. Like, I'm, like, waiting for him to, like, be pushed enough by this guy to snap and, like, just go kill him. But I'm just like, it just doesn't seem like it's in the cards. It seems like they just like rewrote him as just like a normal dude now. Anyways, that's Euphoria. Chris, like, if you want a show that will just kind of like, here's the thing I'll say about the show. My wife looks at her phone constantly through every show that we're watching.
Yeah.
The phone gets set down for Euphoria and The Pit. Like, those two shows, the phone gets set down for.
All right.
Because it's just so entertaining.
Doesn't look like there's like a lot of, like, it doesn't look like it's like that long of a series.
No, either, it's right? A small commitment. You could easily catch up, but like each episode feels like you're watching a movie because it's just so, again, so cinematic and crazy. I would recommend it for sure.
Okay.
What are the other shows I want to touch on? This is a tough one to talk about. Another HBO show called Half Man. Have you heard of the show, Chris?
I've heard of it. I have no idea what it is, though.
Okay. It is from Richard Gadd, who made Baby Reindeer a couple years ago.
I was thinking something different. I was like, is that the one with Ben Affleck? But no, that was Reindeer Games.
It's Reindeer Games. Baby Reindeer.
Not the same.
All right, so Baby Reindeer was like a huge hit on Netflix, which still kind of surprises me because of how tough the subject matter was.
Mm-hmm.
So the premise of Baby Reindeer is this guy, he's a wannabe like comedian and actor, but he's basically just a bartender. And this creepy, like overweight girl starts like, or lady starts stalking him. And it starts off as like kind of a, you know, like a kind of like a fun little thriller, like, and kind of funny. Like this guy's like letting this lady stalk him and he's kind of like going along with it to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
But as the show went on, I remember telling you about this, like, as the show went on, it, like, and this is autobiographical, like, this guy wrote this, it's about his own life. He starts to reveal that, like, what it's really, what the Baby Reindeer is really about is the bartender guy, the guy that wants to be an actor and wants to be a comedian, got approached by some older gentleman who told him he could help him break in the business, and the older gentleman drugged him and raped him. And because of that, it like fucked up with his sexuality and he started to be attracted to trans women. And it's why he allows this creepy lady to stalk him, because he kind of gets off on it because he's so fucked up from getting raped. And to me, the fact that was a huge hit show, I'm just like, the subject matter was really, really tough and like brutally honest. And I can't believe this guy was able to reveal these things about himself that are true, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, if he thought that was tough material, here's my new show, Half Man, on HBO. Holy fucking shit, Half Man is a fucking brutal watch. What it is about is two boys who were kind of forced to grow up together because their mothers got together, like their mothers got into a relationship. And one boy is like a nice, sensitive boy who wants to be a writer. And the other boy is like a bully and he's violent and he's like very scary. And it's about how much that bully fucked up his life. And it flashes between the main character, like he's about to get married, and this bully, his half brother, kind of shows up at the wedding. And then every episode has like, you know, maybe 5-10 minutes at the wedding, and then it flashes back to shit that happened in their youth. And the shit that happened in their youth is just so unbelievably upsetting to watch. So it's a show that I think is like really good, but it is like so hard. Like I could never recommend it to anybody. Like, hey man, you want a good show to watch while you're having a drink tonight after work? Watch Half Man. It'll fucking devastate you. Like it's just too. Again, if you think you can handle the subject matter in this, like there is all rape is only the beginning of it, and it's just like it is. I guess some people call it misery porn, but like I actually think Richard Gadd is actually a really good and brave writer who is like kind of talking about subjects that like people and shows just don't approach. And
yeah.
I think Half Man, it's halfway through it. It's going to be 6 episodes. I've seen the first 3 now, waiting for 4 to come out. I think it's cool. That I could just never recommend it to anybody because I'm just like, I really respect and love what Richard Gadd is doing, but like, I just don't know if this would be anyone's cup of tea. Then again, people like Baby Reindeer, which I thought was like a brutally honest show about like, you know, sexuality and how things can fuck you up. And this is that again, but like a million times worse. So if you want to see like the super R-rated HBO version of what this guy does, there's a show called Half Man airing right now, which I think is great. But Chris is like, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot.
I've got so many other ones. You got so many shows lined up.
Yeah. And lastly, here's one that you might be interested in. There's a new show on Apple called Widow's Bay. Have you heard of it?
No.
Okay. All right. So. This might pique your interest. This is it's a horror comedy show starring Matthew Rhys, and the premise is it's like a Stephen King town, like this coastal. It's like an island off the coast of New England somewhere, and the premise of the show is Matthew Rhys is the mayor, and he's trying to attract tourism to the island and turn it into like the next Martha's Vineyard, but unfortunately. The island has like a history of like all these horrible things happening, and literally like everyone that lives on the island is convinced that the island is cursed, and they believe all these different like curses and stuff, and so like that's the tension is the mayor's trying to attract tourism, but nobody wants anyone to come because like this island's evil, and everyone's gonna die, and it's usually around a 35-minute episode. And each episode so far has kind of been a different thing. It's like episode 2 is like, we're going to reopen this old haunted inn. And like all the townspeople, like, if you think it's safe, you know, they're saying to the mayor, then why don't you spend a night there? And he's like, fine, I fucking will. And so the episode is him spending a night in this old inn. And turns out it is haunted. And he, you know, some scary shit does happen, but he survives. He makes out the next morning. He's like, everything was fine because he's just trying to get the tourists in there.
Yeah.
It is a very funny show but when the scary and spooky supernatural stuff comes in, it's also pretty good on that front too. I don't know if there's like going to be like an overarching thing or if it's just going to be a monster of the week thing like X-Files.
That could be fine.
It's right. Fun. Yeah. Like that's what it is so far. And it's fun. It's like, the episode after that was about a sea hag that, like, if she scratches you, you know, she's connected to you and she's gonna come back and get you. And every episode, it turns out all the legends and all the lore is real, but like, just somehow, like, nothing ever really bad happens so far.
Yeah,
like, everyone just survives. It's just like, I think the show does owe a bit to Twin Peaks for sure.
Sure.
And definitely inspired by like Stephen King and stuff, but it's also just, I think mainly just like it's like if you turn the comedy dial on Twin Peaks up a few notches, that's what this is. It's more funny than scary. And, but it's a fun, like filler show. Like, you know, when I finished an episode of Half Man, I'm like, fuck man, I don't know if I can watch anything after that. I need to
play a game. You're drained.
Yeah. But it's a good chaser. It's a good dessert. It's fun.
How long are the episodes?
Usually like 35 minutes.
Okay. So like a little bit longer than a standard sitcom, but like not.
It feels
not
short full compared hour. To what, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's fun.
That's on Apple.
Yeah. It's on Apple. All it's right. called Widow's Bay.
cool.
Like even right away when you see like the font of Widow's Bay, it's the Stephen King font. Like,
yeah,
they clearly they know what they're going for. You ever see that famous tweet where this girl was like, I got invited to like a Halloween party, so I dressed up as the Baba Duke, and turns out it was more of like a adult drink wine type thing, and it's a picture of her dressed as the Baba Duke, and everyone else is around her. Have you seen that?
Yes.
That's the creator of the show.
Okay.
So, she likes horror, and she's got a really good sense of humor. So
good, good. She's local around here. She's from
Katie Freehold. Dippold?
Yeah, she's from Freehold, New Jersey.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's her show.
Nice. I may check that out. I have Apple, and well, that's where I'm going to be going to watch For All Mankind. So,
yeah, you need to get into these Apple shows, dude. There's some good ones.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I've been watching, and I guess now we're going to talk about two fake movies.
I mean, they're real.
I mean, they exist, and they're real.
Yeah.
So, let me preface this with why we're doing this. So, I had heard for years that there was a fan film called Never Hike Alone that, based on Friday the 13th, that was actually really good. I could never bring myself to watch it because I was just like, dude, are you really going to watch a fan film? You know what I mean? Like,
all right. Yeah.
But then I was like, it popped up into my head again. I looked it up and then I saw, oh shit, there's a fucking part two. And I was like, you know what? If I assign this for the show, that means I'm going to watch it. So that's how we have arrived where we're at, Chris. And I'm actually happy this happened because I ended up liking these.
Spoilers, I did too.
I mean, you can tell that they're not like, you know, Hollywood big budget productions or even the budget of like a normal Friday the 13th movie.
Right.
But as you're watching it, sometimes you could like look past that, forget that, and start to get like engaged by it.
Hey guys, it's day 12, and a beautiful one at that. So today's mission, find the lake. This terrain's looking a little treacherous, but I'm just have to make my way.
Nothing's stopping me.
All right, I'll check in with you guys later. Kyle, out.
But I'll just throw out some of the facts first before we get into it. So Never Hike Alone came out in 2017. It was directed by Vincente DeSante. He has a film production company called, I think, Womp Stomp Films.
Yep.
He crowdfunded this fan film. I think this first one had a budget of like $19,000. And it's not like a full length movie. It's like what the first one's like 50 minutes.
Yeah, it's like the second one's a little bit longer, I think. But yeah,
it's second one's like almost full length. Yeah, first one's under an hour, and it follows this like hiking vlogger,
yep,
named Kyle, who he's just doing his shit, like doing what he does. He goes hiking, he camps out. He posts vlogs, and that's a very popular thing on YouTube. And I thought that was like a really clever premise for this. Like, you know, he ends up like finding a trail marker that's not in his guidebook. And he's like, what the fuck is this trail? And he starts going down it. He's like, this would maybe be better to get around, you know, like get around the lake here. And then he comes up to like a no trespassing sign. And like, this area is closed off. But he's just like, man, I spent like a day walking this way. I would lose so much time going back. Like, I'm just going to cut through and hope like nobody catches me.
Yeah.
And he stumbles upon the closed Camp Crystal Lake. And of course, who has taken up shelter in the closed Camp Crystal Lake? Jason. I don't know about you. I just found like the whole premise of it like neat. Like, it's like a neat way in. Like, it's like a new way to approach the series.
Yeah, because like you're using Jason, you're using the locations, but like you have to find a new entryway. It's like, how do we make this something that's our own? And like, that's how they did it. They modernized it. They found like an inn with like this blogging thing, or vlogging, I guess, video blogs. And yeah, I think it was very smart in how they did it. And like, some of that stuff is very found footagey, like, cause you're getting some shot, like you do get shots of him like just walking, but also like you get some hand cam stuff of like what is he? He has like something on his head, right? Like,
yeah. And then there's also traditional like
it regular mixes
all that stuff. But there's also, there's a traditional camera that, you know, so like, it's not like you're watching the Blair Witch Project.
Correct. Yeah. So it's like
moments of that.
It's like, oh, here's like what he's seeing, but also like, we're going to show you this from like a normal cinematic viewpoint.
Yeah.
So it works.
And there's things that kind of impressed me about this, because like, I don't know how this fucking guy found some like abandoned camp, or like maybe it's an active camp that he could use with all these cabins, and he had like all the like decent amount of set decorations. Like, there's like a bunch of Camp Crystal Lake stuff. Maybe he got it from Spirit Halloween, whatever. But like, it's cool, dude. Like,
it looks legitimate. It looks like this is Crystal Lake. Like, I mean, you know, if you've watched we've watched all the Friday 13th movies multiple times.
Many times.
The camp changes, right? Like, sometimes, like, from film to film. Like,
and it kind of looks like the original, right?
Like, yeah, like, way more so than, like, other ones in the series. So, like, yeah, you have that, like, vibe of, like, this is the original camp.
I thought it was cool. I don't know how they got away with some of this. Like, when he's exploring, we get the Jason is coming sound, that or whatever. Like,
yeah,
like, oh, I guess maybe he just changed it a little bit. Who knows?
He did the Vanilla Ice thing, right? Like, it's like, it's not,
yeah.
It's not,
yeah, yeah.
It's Dan. Like, it's like just and like so, that you changed the cha-cha-cha to just like slightly off. And
the composer of Friday the 13th always says it's key, 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 ma, ma, ma. And I always hear it as ch.
Yeah.
So maybe he just did like, just did, yeah. But when he gets there, though, he's like, oh shit, this is Camp Crystal Lake. And like, he gives the whole story of Jason Voorhees to the cam. And I'm like, So you know this story. And you're just like, fuck it. And he's just chilling there. He makes a fire.
Always stupid. Always dumb people.
But he eventually finds Mrs. Voorhees' head in one of like the upstairs rooms.
Yes.
And he promptly gets thrown out of it. It's not a window. I think he explains it. It's like they used to have like these big doors on the second floor of houses so that you could get furniture up there. He gets thrown out of that.
Okay.
And he gets chased by Jason with an axe. Now, the whole time, like, when they're showing Jason, I was like, man, it just looks like it's normal, like, it's pre-zombie Jason. It just looks like a normal, smooth head.
Yeah.
They do unmask him at some point in this, though, and I was not expecting him to, because I'm like, there's no way you don't have Tom Savini here to like make this shit look cool. Like,
right.
But they did. They unmask him, and they smartly kind of like keep it kind of in shadows. Add whatever the dummy head or whatever they're using is.
Yeah. Again, look, but it's enough that you're like, this look, it feels right.
Yeah, yeah. I get like every little thing. Like I thought that was so smart. I'm like, oh, they actually fucking did it. They had the balls to unmask him, but then they just like keep lighting and shadows is a way to not fully show the makeup. I thought it was really smart. What else do I want to touch on this one? I guess the ending. It ends up with him getting rescued by an ambulance in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Which it's a bit questionable about like how they got out there and whatever. Like, you know, you suspend your belief with some of this shit.
But it has a cool surprise at the end. Like, one of the EMTs is Tommy Jarvis. And it's actually Tom Matthews from Jason Lives. Like, reprising his role. Which I was just like, damn, dude. Like, I wish I didn't know that going in, because I kind of saw it on a thumbnail or something. I'm like, that he's in it. But I was just like, imagine watching this in 2017 and he pops out at the end. Like,
oh, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, yeah.
It adds, like, not, like, it feels legitimately good anyway, but, like, having somebody actually from the series show up.
Like, so cool. It's a fan movie. Yeah. And, like, I think Tom Matthews is actually, like, a decent actor. Like, I liked him in all the stuff he did in the 80s, so.
Yeah.
But that's kind of it. It's like, what I took, you know, Never Hike Alone as, it's like a really cool, like, Friday the 13th short story. Like, and just like approaching it from like an interesting like premise, like finding a new little angle into this. Like, so I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, it's very fun. I think they do a really good job with it across the board. And like when you say, oh, we're going to watch some fan films, like this could go south. Like we've watched some independent shit and it's legitimately well made. It feels like it fits right alongside of some of those like original 8 films.
Yeah.
Like, it's just really, really well done.
I do think like the one shortcoming, it kind of goes back to like the showing his face thing, where like the kills, they don't have the makeup effects to like make them super impressive all the time, but they do a decent enough job. Like there's a head squashing thing, all right, and I do think that they improve it in the second one where they had like a slightly bigger budget. But yeah, the only shortcomings is like you could kind of feel it around the edges that it's fan made, but like it is so good for being fan made that if you're a fan of the series, I just feel like you're going to have a fun time watching it. Like I really was like kind of like surprised by how good this was.
Yeah. You kind of watch it and you're like, this film has no business being as good as it is.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's shocking. I personally would give it like a, it's a cool Friday the 13th short story. I give it like a 6.
Yep, that's right where I am. Like it's really solid. It's a, you know, it's right up there, I would say, with like the half of like some of the Friday the 13th films. So yeah, 6 feels right.
I love, I saw your like Letterboxd review, or not, because you can't log these on Letterboxd. But
I did like a little Twitter, like my little Twitter log.
Where I was like, damn, dude, he's like putting these above half the fucking movies. Like that's impressive. I don't know if I'd go that far. Look, man, if you're a Friday the 13th fan, you've seen all the movies like 18 billion times, maybe the next Friday the 13th, check out one of these.
Yeah, well, so a couple things on, like, so yeah, like, one, check it out, because it is really cool, but it feels fresh. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you watch all those other Friday the 13th movies, and it's like,
so many of them are just the same thing again and again.
Yeah. So, like, I'm sure, like, if we watch this over and over again, like, it probably drives down the list a little bit. But, like, yeah, like, I would probably watch this over some of the lower rated ones in the series, like, just because it's, like, it's newer. Like, I don't know it inside and out like I do some of the other ones, so.
Yeah, that's what is so fun about it is, like, yeah, I know the whole series inside and out, and I'm just like, I've seen these all, and it's been so long since we got something new, and then it turns out there was something new I could have watched. It's just, you know, not official, but it was cool. Which I guess we'll get into Never Hike Alone 2, which I think is even more ambitious, and came out, what, in 2024?
Mm-hmm. So, before we jump into that, did you by chance watch Never Hike in the Snow?
No, I didn't. Did you?
I did. And it does directly tie into part two. So, like, you don't need to have watched it to enjoy part two, but I do think it's neat. Like, so they made, like, it's like short, it's only like 25 to 30 minutes, so it's shorter than either of the other films. But it's Jason in the Snow, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, which is something fans have been clamoring for forever, and I guess we are going to get this upcoming series that's coming up, the TV show.
But there's a nurse in Never Hike Alone 2, and her son has gone missing. And that's the victim in this movie. And Never Hike Alone takes place like 3 months after Never Hike in the Snow. So, like, because they reference shit from from both in Never Hike Alone 2.
Wait. Say that again. Never Hike Alone 2 takes place.
So Never Hike in the Snow takes place a few months before Never Hike Alone.
Okay.
And then Never Hike Alone 2 takes place like immediately after Never Hike.
Actually, it's smartly and really clever. Like, it threw me for a loop. It takes place like concurrently with the first movie. Like, it's.
Yeah.
We'll get into it in a second.
Yes. So yeah, Never Hike in the Snow, fun. Like, go give that a watch.
So it's about the son that went missing.
Yep. Yep.
Awesome. That's so cool. All right. So Never Hike Alone 2 came out in 2024.
There's a legend around here.
His name was Jason.
Killer buried, but not dead. A curse on Crystal Lake.
It's got a death curse.
They're all dead. They're all dead.
Legend has it that Friday the 13th, Jason saw his mother beheaded that night.
They say he died as a boy. But he keeps coming back. You have seen him and lived. Some have even tried to stop him.
It's between me and Jason.
No one can.
Wherever the red dot goes, You bang.
You bang.
People forget.
Jason's out there.
Waiting.
Waiting.
Waiting for what?
To pull me down with him.
He went into his territory. He drew him out. And now people are dead.
Jason belongs in hell. I'm gonna see he gets there.
I think he had about twice the budget that he did, like around $40,000 for this one.
Chokes.
And it feels much closer to being like a real movie. Yeah. Not that like the first one was bad, but like, again, the first one felt like a short story. This is like, it feels like a legacy sequel.
Yeah, there's like sets and like the different locations that you go to. Like that, the first one was very contained. It was like, oh, this is our budget. We're gonna like shoot here. We're gonna do a lot of outside shots.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of like. Yeah, we're getting a lot of like. It centers on Tommy Jarvis, and you know he's an EMT, so you get like all these hospital scenes and stuff. But like, what it is doing. Like, it starts off with, like, he's having nightmares about Jason, and he keeps going out into the woods to look for him. And there's this cop who's pretty funny with these, like, blue-rimmed glasses. Mm-hmm. He's like, tells him, stay away. And what it is doing, and you don't, I didn't realize this at first, is it's taking place at the same time as the first one. It's just showing you things from Tommy Jarvis's perspective. So it kind of builds up to the ending of that first one. Like, you get the ending of the first one again where, like, Jason attacks the ambulance and Tommy drives away. And we get some actual gore here. Like, yeah, I think better than the first one. There's, like, a police lady. She gets, like, an arrow through the neck. Tommy just makes up a rule that if they could destroy Mrs. Voorhees' head, Jason will stop coming back to life. I don't know how he knows that, but it is kind of in line with the stupid shit in the series. Like,
yeah, that's like, there's always weird shit that, hey, if we do this, Jason will stop. Like,
I mean, think of Jason going to hell. It was like only his family member could kill him, and it has to be with this dagger. This is like slightly less ridiculous than that, but it's just like, it was funny to me that like Tommy like somehow knows this is a rule. Like,
yep.
There's a sequence at the hospital where Jason shows up and he starts killing everyone there. And, Jason gets a nurse at one point. Like, we're getting way more special effect work, which is cool. There's a really awesome part in this sequence where, like, it's maybe my favorite scene in the whole movie. It's between the cop with the glasses and Jason, where he like unloads his bullets on him.
Yeah.
And it does nothing. And then Jason like comes up to him and he puts like the gun under Jason's chin and shoots it right through the top of his head. And you're like, oh, he got him now. But no, Jason just is fine. Smashes his fucking head. Eventually, like the Kyle from the first one shows up, and like him and like the nurse team up. And I guess I want to touch on the nurse too, real quick. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that like this nurse who her son has gone missing, and it's like this unresolved thing, and I just felt like it had more heart and like humanity to it than a lot of the Jason movies. Like oh, here's a real character who is like going through something because of what Jason did. I thought was really cool.
Yeah, you never get that in like the actual Friday the 13th movies. Like you never see the effects fallout of what Jason has, the havoc that he's caused to these people, and like what they have to live with. As you know, in this one, her son goes hiking out in the snow and never comes back, and like so she's still holding out hope that he's still out there. And it's like you don't get that feeling from most of them.
Yeah,
you never get that viewpoint.
That was like one thing that like really impressed me about this. I'm like, damn, this like it feels like the stuff that they were doing with like Halloween 2018, where it's like, what are the after effects, you know? And you don't get that in the actual proper series, really. Like you get Tommy Jarvis, like he goes to that group home in part 5, and there's stuff like that, but like for the most part you don't. Like, and this had has this lady who is like scarred by what Jason did, and I thought was really cool. Ultimately at the end, the hiker, like Kyle, gets Jason to split his own mom's head in two with an axe. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy cuts off Jason's head with a machete. We get a little news report at the end of it, which, did you catch who the guy was on the news report? Like, I think he's like a cop or a lawyer or something talking on the news at the very end of it.
I did not.
It's Larry Zerner, who played Shelly in part 3 of Friday the 13th, who he's the like annoying prankster guy who Jason gets his mask from.
Okay.
And that guy is like so game. Like the guy, he's like an entertainment lawyer now in LA, like in real life. And but he does not run away from his past as a cast member of Friday the 13th part 3. Seems to like relish that, and so he was game to come and do this. And then at the end you see like bubbles coming out of Jason's mask.
You got to set it because there's supposedly going to be a Never Hike Alone 3.
I hope there is. Did you stick around for the post credit scene?
I don't know. I think I did let it run, but I'm not sure if I remember what it was.
There's a post-credit scene of a fan. He's a fan of Trail Junkies.
Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
And it's kind of a meta thing where it's like, he's like, I'm a huge fan of Trail Junkies. I don't know where this guy went or whatever, but I'm just going to start making my own like Trail Junkies videos. I'm going to make a fan version of like this YouTube channel, which was a nice nod to the fact that like, this is all fan bullshit.
Yeah, it was neat.
I really enjoyed this. I don't know, man. Like, is it as good as like a actual Jason movie where you're getting the Tom Savini effects and all that, like from part 1 or part 4? No. But I don't know, if you're a fan of the series, I don't know how you don't get a kick out of this. And like, it's such a smart follow-up to the first one, where it's like, we're just incorporating, like, we're going to do the first one again from a different perspective and then wrap it all up. I don't know, dude. I enjoyed it. I'll let you go and say what you have to say about it. But
Yeah, I really liked it as well. Again, like I think this one is, it's like a bigger production. I think it's a better production. There's so much love and respect that the people involved in this have for the Friday the 13th series, and they're just pouring their heart into this to like deliver something that, hey, you know, when was remake? Like, it was a while ago,
2009, right? 2009.
Yeah, so like we haven't had anything in years. And so like they're like, hey, like if they're not gonna do it, we're gonna do it. And they did a really, really good job. Like
really, like just shockingly good for being a fan made. Like it's just,
yeah, because how many independent films have we watched that like this guy knows how to like block shots, he knows how to like record audio. Like it feels professionally done. And you know, maybe, you know, his skills, whatever, but like we've watched people with bigger budgets do worse shit. Like, yeah. And this hits all the right notes. It feels like an actual movie. And it's fun. Like it captures Friday the 13th, like the pure essence. And you know, maybe you could like, if there's gonna be a complaint, like, hey, Jason doesn't look as big as like maybe he does in other films, but whatever. It's fine. Yeah, like otherwise it's great.
Some of the gore effects not as good, but like it just, man, like I'm so happy that I actually like pulled the trigger on doing this, because I'm like, man, people were right. Like this fan film is really good. And like part of me is like, I was gonna ask you, like, hey, are you gonna check out other fan films now? And I'm like, I have a feeling this is a cut above the rest. Like I'm sure there's like Michael Myers fan films and whatnot, but like the fact that like I was aware of this means that like it's probably better than the others, and this is kind of the peak. But if you are a Jason fan, I'd say check these out. I'm gonna go as far with this one as like a 7. Like I was just like surprised by it. Like I thought it was like really clever how they like, hey, we're going back into the events of the first film, but we're seeing what Tommy Jarvis is doing. I thought it was really awesome. I thought the nurse stuff was awesome, and it had like, it has humor, like the cop shooting Jason through the head and then just getting his head smashed. Great.
That like very flamboyant sheriff is hysterical.
He's funny. Yeah. So yeah, good. I'm a fan of it. I'll let you give your final thoughts on it, and then we'll talk about what we're gonna do.
Yeah. Next. Same. Kind of like same thoughts. Like I really, really liked it. I'm glad that, you know, you chose this when you were like, hey, we're watching fan films. Like, I don't know.
No, I was the same way. I was like, should we do this? I don't know.
And as I've said multiple times, like we've watched so many independent films, like horror, and it's like this just gets it. Like they know what they're doing. They know how to do it well. They maybe, you know, don't have the budget to do it as good as like the actual thing, but you know, we're talking budgets of like 90 times less.
Yeah.
And they're doing it well. It's a fun film to watch. They expand on it in ways, like from the first film to this one, they expand on it in ways that like the actual films don't even accomplish properly.
Yeah, like there's more connective tissue between these two than pretty much any of them.
Yeah,
main series.
It's like just so well done. I mean, I hope. I know we're getting Camp Crystal Lake this year, or Crystal Lake. Like we're getting the TV show, but like, I hope somebody looks at what this guy has done and is like, "Hey, how about we bring you in and you do something like canon with us. Like, we do something real, not fan. Like, let's do a real one of these.
Yeah.
And put Friday the 13th back on the board. Like, everybody else, you know, except Freddy, I guess, has had like something recently. Not all good, but let's get Jason back on the board, and let's do something. And this guy, I think, this team. What was the production company?
Like Womp Stomp.
Womp Stomp Films. Yeah. Give them a shot, man. Like, let them do some. Let them cook. I'm right with Jeff. Same score. 7 out of 10. Fun stuff.
And I was gonna end this whole conversation with, like, are you excited for the Crystal Lake show on Peacock?
Excited is maybe a strong word, but I'm gonna watch it. Like,
yeah, me too.
Like, I'm interested, this is just kind of like, it's gotten me even more, like, right, because like, that's, we're getting something official from Friday the 13th.
Yeah,
I want to see how that plays out.
It's been in gestation for forever, but like, there's a few things. Like, I was more excited about it when it was a Brian Fuller show, who, like, I did hear watched, but heard was amazing.
Hear good stuff, yeah.
But it's not him anymore. It's the guy that was running the show was the guy who did Welcome to Derry, which I did not love.
I liked it.
But yeah, like, interested. And I guess the thing that makes me most interested is who's playing Pamela Voorhees, which is Linda Cardellini, who I think is just like smoking hot. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, hell yeah, dude. Linda Cardellini is Mrs. Voorhees. I'm in. But like, I don't know that'll give me my fix of like the stupid hockey mask slasher thing.
Yeah,
this is the prequel. So I'm excited for it, but I don't think it's gonna fill the void that this fills. This fills the void of, we need this new Jason movie, and they did it
right. Like, decent. Yes, yeah. And that's like, look, I love the original Friday the 13th. I love that, like, especially because, like, I didn't watch, I was like 2 when the original Friday the 13th movie came out. So like, when I watched it, like, Jason was already a thing. And yeah. So like, you know about Jason, and like, to me, like, finding out,
it was a surprise,
that,
probably.
Yeah. That, like, holy, like, cause that, like, yeah. Like, oh, we're going to watch Friday the 13th. All right. I know what this is. I know it's the hockey mask dude. And but like, the hockey mask dude, yeah, really isn't the dude until the third one anyway, because like, he's Baghead in the second one.
Yeah.
But like, that's how ubiquitous like Jason is that like, when people say Friday the 13th, you just think of that iconic hockey mask. And so like, when I first watched it, like, yeah, like, that was awesome. And like, you find out, holy shit, like, it wasn't Jason, it's his mom. Like, that's a cool twist that, like, it's one of the reasons I really love that film, because I
can't, it's almost, it's like a retroactive twist, because you're coming in with, yeah, knowledge from the future. Yeah.
Yep. So like, yeah, I just don't know how that's gonna play out. It's interesting that it's the same showrunner from Welcome to Derry, though, because that's also a show that's like, this doesn't need to exist. Like, but I did like what they did with Welcome to Derry. They found
it was very in line with Andy Muschietti's It movies too. Like, it just,
yeah,
felt,
yeah,
like,
very much same. So.
Yeah,
it's just like, it's just a weird thing. It's like, doesn't need to be here, but it's interesting enough. I'm into, yeah, it.
No, I'm excited. I'm actually excited for it, but I'm just like, I don't think it's gonna give me the same fix that this does. So, if you need your Jason fix, there's fake movies out there that are,
yeah,
pretty fucking good.
Yep.
What are we doing next? What are you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, like, as I'm looking through, like, because I looked up Never Hike Alone, and, like, Google will give you other options of, like, hey, like, you search for this, but here's, like, some others. There's a whole, like, bunch of Friday the 13th fan films that, Jason Rises, and like, there's a whole bunch of stuff, and people are making multiples of them. Like, they have sequels to them. And so, yeah, you could go down the Friday the 13th fan film rabbit hole if you want.
I'm sure there's exists for, like, Halloween and stuff, but I had just always heard that, like, Never Had Halloween was good, and I'm like, and it is good, but now I'm like, I don't know if I trust anything else other than that.
No,
I feel like
no.
It's cut above probably than the rest of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you go watch something else and to be like, oh, this is what I expected.
Yeah, exactly.
Next month, we're going to watch some Hitchcockian type films. So not films made by Albert Hitchcock, but more modern day, kind of like people have taken his stylings and things that he has done and done their own things with them. And so the first one is 2018's. It's called Under the Silver Lake.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Starring Andrew Garfield, Riley Keough, Topher Grace. And the other one is 2019's Vivarium. Starring Jesse Eisenberg and Imogen Poots. They are different types of Hitchcockian type approaches, but both very much in that
have you seen these movies?
I've not, which is one of the reasons why I picked them. It's like, these seem interesting. And Hitchcock is not something we've explored much, if any, in our six seasons of doing this, so I thought it'd be an interesting way to enter into there.
All right, so I've seen these both.
Okay.
I don't know if I call either of them. I would, if I vary them, like, to me, is like Twilight Zone.
I mean, Twilight Zone is there are Hitchcock and Bruce.
Yeah. Under the Silver Lake, I think it's like, I can't wait to revisit this. I didn't love it the first time, but I was just like, this is so interesting. Like, it's the guy that did It Follows. Like, it was his follow-up to It Follows. And
okay.
It bombed, and so he got put into director jail until he would do...
I guess on the end of Oak Street comes
yeah,
out.
Yeah, until he would do a Spielberg movie. Yeah, and then a follow-up, like a sequel to It Follows. But, like, people who... like Under the Silver Lake, like, love it. And I remember liking it quite a bit, like, but, like, it weirdly reminded me of The Big Lebowski. But we'll get into that next month. Yeah, I'm really excited to at least revisit that one. Vivarium, I was iffy on, but
okay.
Under the Silver Lake, I'm, like, super interested to revisit. I'm happy that you're gonna finally see it.
Yeah, because I, like, looked up, like, modern day Hitchcock films, and these were
interesting.
Two of the top ones that came up as recommendations.
That's
so
interesting. Okay. Yeah. I'm super interested to watch Under the Silver Lake. I really am. Like, I liked it, but I have a feeling I'm rewatch. I like it even more, and I'm very curious how you'll react to it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. These are first time watches for me, as I said, and I do like the cast in both of these. Like, I like Jesse Eisenberg.
Garfield's great.
I like Garfield, like Riley Keough. Yeah. So yeah,
and like Under Silver Lake feels like this. Like, I mean, we'll talk about it more next month, but it feels like this, like, examination of internet culture and how it can make you insane with, like, conspiracy theories. That's kind of what it's about. And it like, I think at the time it felt ahead of its time almost. Like, it was just like, I'm super interested to rewatch that movie because, again, people, like, really love it. I saw it, I remember liking it, but I did not love it.
All right,
but yeah, we'll be back next month to talk about those. I hope you all check out these stupid Friday the 13th films because they're pretty actually good.
Please do.
And yeah, we'll be back with some Hitchcockian nightmares. Chris, say goodnight.
Good night.